One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napson.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and this is one of our News and Q's episodes. The news stands for news, and the Q stands for questions. That's never going to change. We're never going to flip it around and say Q stands for news. We're not that chaotic.
No. Chaotic normal? What does that mean? I don't know. I agree with you on that there. Before we get going and I say too many more ums, we're going to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from. That's a lot for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, we have our 4Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. And as you know, we are not done there. We have still the second offer, Joseph.
That is right. Insight Editions is a publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books and other great pop culture books, but we're talking Star Wars. They are offering 35% off across their website with a special 4Center code. You can get your discount by entering the coupon code FC35, or you can visit the website with this link, insighteditions.com/discount/FC35. Boy, it's exciting to say websites with all those slashes in them. This week, we are recommending the Insight Editions book, Secrets of the Jedi. I've gone on about this one before. It's one of my very favorites. I think particularly if you're a big fan of the Jedi, or if you're a big fan of, or if you have a younger fan in your life, it's a really great entry into the world of the Jedi. Got little secret codes you can pull out, all sorts of great stuff. So check that out with the code FC35.
Very fun interactive book. Great choice. I actually forgot about that one. We have it. Good one.
They're successfully secrets. You forgot the secrets of the Jedi. Way to keep those secrets, Jedi.
Oh, I love it. So check that out, folks. As always, I like to catch up with each other. I have a tiny adventure, but you've had a bigger adventure. So just, if you don't mind, I'll just share mine. And then
please,
your story, because it sounds like you had some fun foraging for Star Wars this weekend. real quickly, this is big. This is actually pretty big. If you know me, if you listen to me, if you've seen me on YouTube shows, you know, one of my standards, one of my things I'm known for is a certain Star Wars hat with the Imperial insignia on it. I get new ones when they get a little too sweaty or dirty. I order new ones. Haven't had the same one for about 5-6 years. It's what I know in there. I even got a plush. A fan made a plush of me with the hat on it. This week, Joseph, I did it. I got a Rebel insignia hat. Nice one, new era, 39, was it 39, whatever the style is, the low profile, because I have a big head. And the white Imperial insignia, it's hanging right there on my wall next to my Rebel insignia, head next to my Imperial insignia, looking at both of them right now. It says, "Remember Alderaan" on the back, which I actually wish that wasn't there, because the other one had Death Star engineering, and I didn't want that one on there too. I like subtle Star Wars stuff. Yeah, I finally had to do it, Joseph. There was an incident about 2 or 3 weeks ago. I had the Imperial insignia hat on, and someone kind of recognized it in a coffee shop, and they made a face.
Oh, really?
And I thought, maybe it's time to represent the light side.
Yeah, that was somebody who was probably mad at the sequel trilogy or something, right?
I don't know. I just, she kind of looked up, and she kind of gave me a look and kind of scrunched her face, and I thought, you know, I like the Imperial insignias. I like the toys. But over the years, you know, that could, why not represent the plucky Rebels? So,
yeah.
I'll still wear both. But I'm very happy with this very high quality Rebel hat.
So is this for you? Is this a symbol of evolution? Not like you don't like the Imperial characters or the Imperial story, but that's not the main thing you want to broadcast? Is that where this is coming from?
Yeah, it's a little bit. We've talked often how, you know, the real world and Star Wars sometimes become intertwined, and it's not as fun to go out in the world and be like, yeah, I like the stormtroopers taking over the land and oppressing the galaxy.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is really interesting. Like we've talked about in a lot of recent episodes, I think it is great to celebrate the bad guys in lots of different ways. But then there is that, like, I feel like when you and I were growing up, if you had a symbol of the Empire, in fact, when you and I met and that was your aesthetic, that was just a different way to say I like Star Wars.
Yes.
But now maybe it doesn't feel as much that way to you.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like, I think it's fair. I talk often, but in G.I. Joe, like, I do love Cobra. The Baroness is one of my favorite characters and all this kind of thing. But it's like, you know, what are you putting out there? And now that it no longer this shortcut to just a Star Wars conversation, like you said, you and I are from an era where, you know, if you had a Star Wars t-shirt on, you might feel uncomfortable wearing it in public. We're past that, thankfully, fortunately, for the most part, I will say. But yeah, it just, so now it is very specific. You know, because I had the Imperial hat on at AutoZone buying some windshield wipers, and the kid behind the counter was like, "Hey, cool hat." You know, that was the end of our conversation. But then the coffee store interaction, again, could have, maybe it was just me. She might have just not like me. I don't know. But I just, it was just said that it just lingered on my brain. And I was like, all right, it's time. Let's add a Rebel hat to our wardrobe here.
The coffee shop worker could have been reflecting on the complex relationship between pop culture symbols and the way they can be appropriated and not appropriated by people in the real world who maybe or maybe not reflect certain ideology, or that worker could have just had some gas in that moment.
It could have been, or I made one too many complicated orders. You know? Raspberry mocha hot with agave and some oat milk, you know, might have been the thing.
Yeah, but I mean, I think this is great. I think it is great that we can always love the things that we love. This doesn't, you know, mean we won't talk about you liking Imperial characters a ton. But it's always good to be able to sort of evolve with our fandom and our fashion.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Tighter cut of jeans and a rebel hat. Things are changing. All right.
And I saw my first article, Ken, where somebody, maybe it was an article or tweet, I can't remember now, were like, oh, man, the tight jeans are getting kind of out of fashion.
Yeah, you know what?
And I was like, I just needed to wait like 5 more years.
Well, that's an old other podcast maybe, because I don't have skinny jeans. I have slim cut, tighter jeans, right? I'm not going to do the skinny jean thing, but like, it just, you see picture. I saw a picture of me about 5 years ago, just random. And I was like, look at that bulky legged a-hole. Like, no, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. I'm comfortable where I am now. So there you
yes,
go.
Yes. I understand. my life adventures is really funny. I didn't think I was going to have any Star Wars adventures because my wife and I, both fully vaccinated, decided to celebrate by taking a trip out of town. We just wanted to go somewhere where we could see the ocean from our hotel room and sit and read books. I was really big on, I just want to sit and read books. And so my wife found a hotel in Ventura, California, about 2 hours, 90 minutes drive, depending on the traffic. It could be 6 hours, depending on the traffic drive from Los Angeles. And we did get some great reading time in. So I was like, I'm not going to have any Star Wars adventures because I'm not reading Star Wars books. Not that I don't read them and love them, but this was my opportunity to read some other things. And I thought, I'm not going to have anything to report. And then there's a charming downtown in Ventura, which you are well aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife was like, well, what if we just look, there's a used record store. There's a used bookstore. There's antique stores. Why don't we just, you know, at lunchtime, we'll pause our reading. We'll just bop in. We were downtown for about 6 hours. and in particular, spent a bunch of time in this antique shop. And I really love antique shops, but this one had a bunch of Star Wars stuff, and it was really fun to see the different eras, so much different Phantom Menace stuff, weird Phantom Menace stuff that I've forgotten about, of these like weird sort of like flip phones that had big pictures of Sidious in them, like not even a picture, like a little carving of Sidious in it.
Yeah.
There was a glass case of Kenner figures, which I haven't seen, you know, obviously they're around at Star Wars Celebration, but I didn't look at them too much. I haven't really just looked at them in a long time in a case. So I spent a lot of time just looking at them, looking at what condition they're in. And then they also had a couple of modern vintage collection figures in the package, like Enfys Nest and Range Trooper. And I haven't looked them up. Maybe they're really rare and valuable, but they had them for $89. It's like, the date's right there on them. They're sealed with like they've been like, you know, analyzed, right? So it says like they're near mint.
Okay.
Enfys Nest says 2018. So it's like anybody reading this can see this is not a forgotten figure from 1981. Like, so that was really weird of like looking at all these figures from my past. And like, I just bought that one like 2 years ago. Is it worth $89? I don't know. But my favorite thing that I found, Ken, I took some pictures of it. I'll send them to you. There is one of the larger kind of 12-inch, a little bit more doll-like because it has fabric clothes figures. It must have been from around 2002 or 2003 because it's in the Attack of the Clone style packaging, that era. And it is labeled Empire Strikes Back. It's labeled Imperial Officer. And the Imperial Officer just... I don't know if it's modeled after any one particular officer from Empire Strikes Back, but there's just something about him that he just looks like Ned from accounting. There's just something. He does not look at all like, yes, I am putting my boot down on the galaxy. He just looks like, this is my day job, man. I just want some coffee. And it was already funny enough and weird enough. I took pictures of it, and then I turned the package around thinking, like, I wonder if they're going to say any more detail of like which specific Imperial officer this is meant to be, because on the front it just says Imperial Officer. And then on the back of this Empire Strikes Back branded action figure, huge picture of Moff Jar Gerard.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nice to see a picture of him. This is not a Moff Jar Gerard action figure. So I felt offended for you, Ken, knowing
your fandom
of Moff Jar Gerard.
Yeah. And there's my loyalty to the Empire showing through here, huh? That's yeah, I'll have to swing up and check that out.
Yeah, I think I didn't look at the price tag because I was he was big and I was afraid I wouldn't be able to stop myself and I would purchase him.
Yeah, and by the way, I want to hear more of your tale here, but I went to Amazon real quick and just to see if I was to try to get an Infant's Nest 3¾ vintage collection, $30. So so whoever was running that shop, maybe that $89 price tag was, maybe they know something we don't. Maybe it's a little harder to get because the Range Trooper I can get right now for $12.
Yeah, I did not think it was worth $89, but man, that was like, there was so much in that store, not just action figures, but you know, records and comic books, and I was in heaven. But I by the time I got to that case, I was like in an almost like a frenzy state.
Right.
I was hungry. I was tired. The emotions of seeing those Kenner action figures, and I literally did a double take. I'm like, this isn't right. It can't possibly. Infant's Nest can't possibly be that. I mean, she's that valuable to me as a character. But anyway. Yeah. Anyway, it was really fun to have the Star Wars adventures, and then we did end up. There's a boardwalk that we had a nice walk on along the ocean. It did eventually go into an actual sand dune, and my wife loves the sand, so we walked on the sand a little bit. And I can't walk on the sand without thinking about Anakin. He is not wrong. It does get everywhere. And Converse shoes do not protect you from the sand.
No. Having grown up, a mile from Pismo Beach, my childhood and young adulthood, when I saw that Attack the Clones line, I was like, yeah, guy's right. Like, I hate sand, hate it. And I'll still go to the dunes and everything play. But as a kid, Sunday afternoons, packing up, playing with Star Wars figures in the sand dunes in Pismo Beach, you for 3 days, you're shaking it out of your ears. Come on. I'm with you,
Anakin. Yeah, so Anakin is right, and Enfys is very expensive. That's what I learned this weekend. Those were my adventures, Ken.
I love it. There's something powerful about found Star Wars when you're just out in the world and Star Wars finds you.
I love it. It did in a big way, and it was great.
I love it. From there, we're going to go to Star Wars news. Speaking of found Star Wars, how about found old news that surfaced? we're going to talk about this Dave Filoni thing. This is the old Filoni promotion news surfaces. Has a second part of the story, reveals a production halt. We're going to talk about that. Variety kind of summed it all up. This kind of exploded. I saw some folks, Charlie Schneider of Emergency Awesome was one that tweeted it out, and some other folks saying, hey, the StarWars.com website, or at least the Lucasfilm website, I should say, has Dave Filoni's executive creative director, along with Doug Chang and John Knoll, we should point out. And look at this. Voila, Dave's promoted. Boom, explosion of tweets, as I'm sure we all saw, which included Ming-Na Wen, Katie Sackhoff. I saw that and I thought, well, maybe Dave just, he doesn't tell people about work. Maybe he doesn't, maybe a credit to him. Maybe he's like, yeah, cool, I got promoted. Turns out, as Variety exposed, like a salacious news here. This was last year, or at least last summer. This is something that came out, but the website hadn't been updated. So look, that's on them. They created Lucasfilm accidentally created this story and this hoopla. Dave Filoni has been one of the executive creative directors, which means he'll oversee a lot of things at Lucasfilm. Maybe he'll have a finger in Indy 5. Maybe the Willow TV show. Who knows? This could be across the board. It is a Lucasfilm position. Again, along with Doug Chang and John Knoll. So I just want to talk to you, Joseph. You were kind of on the road when a lot of this happened. Did you get caught in this Filoni tidal wave?
The tidal wave. I did. I did actually look at it, and I think I saw the initial explosion and saw the mix of just the positivity of like, congrats. And then I saw the anger of like, yeah, Kathleen Kennedy is out. And then I saw the response to the anger of, but Kathleen Kennedy would have promoted him.
Yeah.
So I saw the cycle and I said, I'm familiar with this. And then I saw this Variety headline that was like, the big news is this is not new. News.
Yeah.
And I was happy and intrigued to see. I was actually really happy to see that clarification from, you know, a big entertainment, a source of, you know, entertainment news like Variety to clarify it all. It was really, really great. I was happy to see that.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. And What I like about that, as we talk about just that news and that title, is because it's been in place for a while, there's no need to speculate about what this means about anyone's future or anything, you know, because it's already been. The past is dry. The ink is dry. The past is already written. All those quotes you want to say. Great Scott, Marty. So that just gives me confidence that all things are, you know, firing on all cylinders as we go to this next phase of Star Wars shows development. That's exciting that those three, Doug Chang and John Knoll and Filoni, rewarded for years of work. Well done. And that Kathleen Kennedy recognizes that.
Yeah. No, I feel like I understand why we as fans would respond to such powerful sounding words as executive creative director. Yeah. That's great. But I think, you know, we should always be careful about spinning corporate job titles that maybe we understand, maybe we don't know exactly what that means internally to Lucasfilm, you know, and being careful to spin them into any, you know, specific meaning or anything that we want them to mean. I think for me, especially knowing that Doug Chang and John Knoll are also creative executive or executive creative directors, I just think that's great because I think Star Wars needs that balance of the old and the new. And with all these new shows, a lot of new voices are coming in, a lot of new creators, and we need that fresh perspective of people pulling out what ideas in Star Wars mean the most to me, what new horizons can we explore? And then you have, you know, three people like Filoni, Doug Chang, and John Knoll, who all have that old wisdom, that old learned experience. And it creates this great balance of old and new, of being able to invite new people in and go, just follow your bliss, just play with Star Wars. And if it gets into this area that we're like, ooh, let's look at that. There are these like great mentors. Yeah. To guide the new voices. I think that's great. That's I don't know if that's what it is, but that's what I want it to be.
Yeah, well, those three names, you're right. Not only just we just know them and been around, but they aren't just they're not relics. They're active, and they have been leading and among the leaders of this new generation of Star Wars, which means they know how to take it from the past, like you said, and they know how to move it forward and work with everyone and adapt and adjust, but keep true to that mythical what is Star Wars thing. And that just makes a lot of sense to me. And again, excited. Rogue One with John Knoll, Doug Chang's design, especially early on Force Awakens. And we all know what Filoni's brought to the table. So I think it's a great point, old and new, and they are all of those things.
Yeah. And then one other thing that I wanted to throw out there is I think there are, you know, bits of old news scattered all around us that like the Rise of Skywalker Visual Dictionary has some great quotes early in it where talking about Filoni kind of weighing in on this idea of, hey, let's really focus on Leia as the mother. And there's a quote from Filoni talking about how great that is because you know, the icon of mother has not been as explored in Star Wars as the icon of father. So like, it's just a quote in a book. But to me, that's like, okay, these quotes are coming from group meetings, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like Filoni has been involved in like these big picture, like discussions back and forth for a long time. And the fact that maybe this title means that's solid. That's a thing that happens all the time. That's great for everybody.
Yeah. And again, you got Kathleen Kennedy recognizing it. You got Rian Johnson. Hey, Dave, take a look at this lens and tell me what you think. It's live action. So, you know, it's all the same to me. It's all good people doing good things and creating these stories we love.
Yeah.
Out of this, though, this was interesting. This was interesting. And we'll say, as of right now, I did a quick double check. Nothing official from Lucasfilm. We do try to wait for that. But again, this is Variety. In this, they talked about the slate of new shows and movies and everything coming down the line. And then they just kind of said, well, I think it was even in a parenthesis, Rangers of the New Republic is no longer in development. And this became the second part of the story, Joseph. So that's salacious. It ties to things we've talked about before. And also, it's just there's so many things going on. I'm actually kind of not surprised at some of these. The more of these projects maybe aren't on hold or in development. There's just a lot going on. And we just, on that investor day, just heard about a few. So what do you think about this? Again, no reason given. Lucasfilm was not confirmed, but we're just speculating on what we think this might be and what it means to us, Joseph.
Yeah, I mean, I think the turn of phrase was not in active development, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I'm the way that I took that is, A, we should be just wide open about how to take that, because that's a pretty ambiguous phrase. That could mean that they're actively, Dave Filoni is sitting down writing Ahsoka every day and they're talking about it, and they're just not actively working on Rangers of the New Republic. Doesn't necessarily mean they're not going to make it. It's just that they're not actively working on it right now. And I think for me, and this is just total opinion, total conjecture. I got nothing to back it up. It's just an opinion from listening to Favreau in particular talk about Star Wars on the behind the scenes things. I think all the Mandalorian adjacent shows are just very creatively fluid. I personally think that's why all those Mandalorian books were canceled.
Yep.
That I think Favreau really wants to be like, hey, I think this is what Mandalorian season 3 is going to be. So then it would tie into Ahsoka this way and tie into Rangers of the New Republic this way. But wait, I just got a new idea.
Yeah.
And really wants to have that elbow room to not be locked in by years and years of, you know, sort of pre-planning and connection. And,
yeah,
you know, I think it could be if there had been an idea for Rangers of the New Republic and then it be, and then there was a new idea and it didn't seem that it was, you know, important to tell that story in the next 2 years. Maybe it's just like, yeah, sure, we'll do it down the line. But now it's fluid. It changed.
Yep. Right there with you. And that active development could mean a lot. You're correct to point that out. And I, for one, believe in my heart that this wasn't as super planned as you'd think. And that they have a plan is a rallying cry of just, I don't know. I don't want to get negative. It's just something I've never been super excited for, to have everything planned down to the minute. I don't think that's how it works. I don't think that's how you want it to work. And this is just, to me, another indication of that. And yes, is the character of Cara Dune supposed to be involved? Maybe, but maybe not as much as you would think. Who knows? I don't know if they knew. I just think they wanted to get some stuff out there. And you're right. Hey, I've got an idea. It's a pretty powerful thing as a creator. You know? Including, yeah. I got an idea. What if Luke shows up? That's something we saw in Mando, too. Something Favreau said. That wasn't what he had planned. That's what the story dictated. Paraphrasing, of course. So, yeah, I'm actually, for what this means to me, I'm actually excited about it. I don't want anything wedged in. And if there's a reason, even if the reason is we're just not feeling it right now, until I'm sitting down and watching it on my couch, none of it's real until it actually
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, yeah, if Lucasfilm came out and was like, half those shows we announced we're not doing, like, fair enough. That would be frustrating because fans get excited.
Yeah. Totally.
But especially in this Mandalorian thing where we got Book of Boba Fett, you know, that's will be coming in the grand scheme of things shortly. You got Mandalorian season 3, Ahsoka season, I think, is for sure coming. It would seem to me, again, just utter conjecture, that if there's a lot of storytelling threads in this little era of Mandalorian adjacent shows, and maybe Rangers of the New Republic was going to deal with what seemed to be hinted at to me with the character of Carson Teva being aware that there's too much Imperial activity. What's going on? That seemed really like, let's pull up these threads of early evidence of the First Order. And if that was what the show was going to be, maybe there was a decision, we don't want to focus on that. Or actually it dovetails better with this story we want to tell, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I'm still want the Carson Teva variety hour. I still want it. It was interesting.
I would be happy with Entertainers of the New Republic.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. Look, and for me, I get, you know, we cover a lot of these news. You and I have really pulled off of scoops and rumors and leaked set photos. We don't really want to cover that here. And this is none of those things. But this one did kind of catch me by surprise a little bit. Like, oh, okay. Interesting. Let's find out what that means. Or we might never know what that means. But
yeah. And I know some people are reacting to it as though it is, you know, all about Cara Dune. And I think there's a possibility that there's an idea that, hey, the Rangers of the New Republic, this idea that these sort of frontiers law people, this new young government are figuring things out on the frontier. I think, yeah, it would have totally made sense to feature Cara Dune. But I also feel like, you know, not only Carson Teva, but there's so many other characters, including brand new characters. There's no reason that story couldn't be told without Cara Dune as well.
100% agree with that as well. So from what is not coming, maybe, to something that is coming, we're going to read a little bit here of The Rising Storm. This is, of course, the Kevin Scott written sequel in a way to Light of the Jedi, but the next big chapter in the High Republic era. This will be out June 29th. Nice little excerpt here. And I'll start here too, Joseph. Historically here at Force Center, we don't dive into the little book excerpts a lot. Even if it's a book we're looking forward to, or even one, I know you and I maybe don't get super excited for Thrawn, but we don't read that. We also don't read any of the other ones. We just, we don't spend a ton of time. But High Republic, I personally have been really excited just to get little morsels with these little clips they're sending out. Cause I just so love what has come so far. And I think it's a testament to the series overall, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that my excitement for the actual stories being told in these excerpts for what is this beginning of this kind of next phase, I've been so excited to just see the strategy of storytelling. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I've been so excited by from seeing these excerpts from The Rising Storm in particular is that, okay, some of the big threads set up by Light of the Jedi, the first adult novel, are going to continue here in this second adult novel. That's kind of nice to give you a sense of what to expect then throughout the whole High Republic era, you know, at least the beginning here, because that was one of the kind of thrills and anxieties of Light of the Jedi, of like, Loden Greatstorm, great story. When or where will that be continued in any way? And it's really great to get the confirmation that, well, in the next adult novel.
Yeah, and they should put that on the cover. Another Star Wars adult novel. Oh,
adult.
Smooching in it. We took a peek at this. This focuses mostly on Bel Zedifar. Thoughts on this one here, Joseph? Big themes of attachment, which is a lot of what is Bel is about. He is a Charhound Ember. He names spaceships. He's attached to his master that he believes is gone, Loden Greatstorm. So thoughts on what you read here?
Yeah, I love this brief passage from his new master, Indira, where she says, Jedi can love Bel. We're not droids, nor should we ever be. We are living creatures rich in the Force with everything that brings joy, affection, and yes, grief. Experiencing such emotions is part of life. It is light. I love that because I think that's an idea that is definitely found many places in Star Wars. I think you and I and many other Star Wars thinkers and talkers talk about it, but it's really just great to hear that in such a concrete way of like, emotions are wonderful. It's just that we can't let them guide us towards, you know, destructive action. And that's what we're concerned about. And that passage to me really continued this great storytelling in High Republic of Jedi are really interesting, even when they're doing a good job, when they're at their best, because it's hard to be a good Jedi. And this is such a great example of, look, this is exactly the kind of conversations that should be happening. These are the kind of challenges you run into, and how do you overcome them? It's really great.
Yeah, I'm really fascinated. Bell's so far been just this great character, and because he's young, still technically what a Padawan, older Padawan, ready to make that big leap, and that's part of what's going on here. It's a really chance to analyze these core tenets of the Jedi, the attachment and all those kind of things. And I'm not saying he's going to go to the dark side or he's going to be a Vader of this era. I love that he's young and Ember's is, kidding their dog is a pretty powerful story. We've all lived it in some way. And I'm reading the Ember stuff here, the Charhound stuff. And I'm just like, my heartstrings are being pulled. And, I don't think anything dark's going to happen, but it's like, take that and go, measure your attachments. Well, I got this dog here. No, measure your attachments. it's a way to tell some of those lessons in a kind of a new, exciting way for me in this era where the Jedi are running on all cylinders.
Yeah, exactly. And the Jedi are all human or not, the species human. They're all organics. They're all people with emotions, characters with emotions, and they're trying to figure it all out. I think Bel is a great character. I love that you pointed out that he's got a little bit of this sort of dalliance with attachment. But I also really like this passage really sets up these fun challenges and what's specific to his character, too. That idea that Loden said, I think you're ready to be a Jedi Knight, and Bel doesn't want to.
Yeah.
Doesn't want to take that step. Mm. And that idea that he the challenge that he has to face his Jedi trial is, how does he deal with these emotions about not being able to let go of Loden? And then the thing that's really great for me is this would be utterly compelling if we, the audience, knew, Loden's dead and Bel has to let go. But this is a really fascinating question of, if Bel is having a hard time letting go, is that a failing of his Jedi teachings, or is some part of the Force whispering to him? Is this an example of a time where a Jedi should not just let go because Loden isn't actually dead?
Well, yeah. No, that's a great point. You know, we've seen some of that stuff with you know, Ahsoka and Anakin and the Clone Wars. And when do you let go? And when do you keep hope alive?
Yeah,
and it's a needle you got to thread. So you're right. When that reveal, that news, however it's going to happen, Loden's not in great position right now. Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, because I can see it putting Bell in a really bad position if he's like, he struggles, but he lets go. And then as soon as he kind of accomplishes that, he realizes, Loden's alive and being horribly tortured.
Yeah.
and you decided the great Jedi thing was to just walk away.
That, yeah, exactly. And I'm rooting for Loden to survive too, by the way. But like, yeah, what if he finds out he did die, but he wasn't dead, and I'm sitting over here praying, you know?
Like, yeah.
You know, a little, again, it's Anakin stuff, but it's the big themes and it should be dealt with and explored. And I think I'm excited to see what they do here. I was going to ask you about this, though, and feel free if you want to talk more about the themes and stuff with Bell, but this is a bit of a change of topic. We got this ship, the Innovator, and we got this species, Cyclorians, who are from Rise of Skywalker. It's their first appearance. These little insectoid and sentient species, little ant-like little looking creatures. And they're hardworking. They built this ship. You got this main character who's kind of proud of it. But I looked them up. Yeah, their first appearance, Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, that's so great. I love this. We were just talking about this the other day when the Vorpax from Resistance popped into Bad Batch. I love when something gets introduced in one place and then it gets seeded in different places. I think it's one of the great things about Star Wars jumping around in the timeline, right? Of it, something can be introduced in you know, a story that's as far down the timeline as we go in modern canon with Rise of Skywalker, and then seeded hundreds of years previous.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, the ship's designer is an Aqualish engineer named Vam Targus. That's I was talking about too, but also these Cyclorians working out there. Yeah, this fun little tidbit.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm a big fan of the Aqualish. This has been a great time for Aqualish fans lately in Star Wars. So I was happy to see another Aqualish.
And indeed it has. Indeed it has. So look at that. There you go. The Rising Storm. We're already excited for it. And this comes out, like I said, June 29th. New round of High Republic content coming your way. I'm finally, I got the comics in my hand. I was trying to do this weekend. I lost time, but trying to catch up with the comics as well. So we'll get to those as well.
Yes, we will. We'll get to it all.
That's a look at Star Wars news. But right now, before we take a break, we have our Force Center Recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us.
Yeah, this one has been on my mind because we're talking about the Kenobi television show so much. And last week we did a big episode about Qui-Gon. And hey, it's kind of ties into the High Republic in a way, because it is about Jedi, maybe at their height, maybe not. Anyway, it's Master and Apprentice by Claudia Gray, one of my favorites. So we suggest you checking it out.
Absolutely. Check it out on us. Help yourself and help the show by downloading your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. All right, quick break. We'll reset and come back with your questions here on Force Center.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey, 4 Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4 Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
All right, welcome back to 4 Center, the big show, the main show, the superstar destroyer of our fleet, or the profundity of our resistance fleet as well. Here, just to get all sides represented. Joseph, we got some great questions, as we always do, but some wonderful ones here from our listeners. What do we got?
Yeah, we got two from Twitter, two from our patrons on Patreon, so let's dive into Twitter first. Harry Higgins says, hey, 4 Center fam, what's your take on Luke taking out his blue saber in The Last Jedi? I always loved The Last Jedi, but I can't help but wonder why Luke would have not appeared with his green saber as he projects the legend of Luke Skywalker to give hope to the Resistance and the galaxy. Thanks. This is a great question. I've had this conversation in person and over text with different friends.
Right.
It's a great one to give some thought to. What is your take on this? When Luke projects to Krayt and appears before Kylo and the Resistance and the First Order and everyone, he is wielding the Skywalker blade, not his green blade. What are your thoughts on that?
This is one of those situations and questions too, where it's like, sometimes there might be, we've heard enough from the creators to think, well, hey, here's why, or the hows and whys of it in the story. And a lot of it might be around, hey, this is what Kylo wants. So Luke wants to bring that to his mind. I think a lot, the symbolism of Rey handing him the blade and Luke playing around with that. I really wanted to look at this question even a little bit more, Joseph, just like what might have been in Luke's thoughts. And I just had this one idea too of maybe that green lightsaber just represents that big failure. And maybe he wants to clear the mojo a little bit here. And if he's going out there, you know, again, all the other things, he knows that Kylo or Ben would react to that blade, wants the blade. It's a symbol, all those kind of wonderful things, which I think are all true. But I just have this idea of Luke going, yeah, man, that I'm going to leave that one in the lost and found on Octo because I got to step away from that one a little bit.
Yeah, I like thinking about it from a personal level of Luke of like, yeah, it's not I want to put that one down is a part of it. Yeah, I love that. For me, I think I really go to I love Ken to really think about it from Luke's perspective. I really go that it is a message to Rey. Mm-hmm. Rey offered him that blade twice and he rejected it. And then he has that great conversation with Yoda about, yep, hey, you made a mistake. You lost Ben Solo. We can't lose Rey. Mm. I think a big part of Luke projecting to Crate is, yeah, definitely showing the legend of Luke Skywalker and letting himself be a legend and letting himself be a symbol of hope because the galaxy needs that. I think it's processing for Luke that he needs to face his mistake, which means him facing Kylo/Ben. I think it's the practical saving Leia, saving the resistance. But I also think a big part of it is him saying to Rey, I was wrong. Mm-hmm. The Jedi do need to continue. I know that this blade has a complex legacy, and you offered it to me, seeing it just as a symbol of hope, just as a symbol of the dark side is rising, and there needs to be heroes, there needs to be the Jedi there to meet it. That's what this blade is to Rey. And Luke rejected all those things. And I think it's him saying specifically to Rey with that blade, you are not wrong to see this as a symbol of hope, as a symbol of legacy, and as a symbol that the Jedi should continue.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm right there with you on that. I almost as if he's to say, like, Jedi's weapon deserves more respect than that. Oh, wait, he'll say that a little bit later. Yeah, like, hey, yeah, you're right. I should have taken it. Because she offers it twice, right? And then she's like, cool, I'm going to give it to Ben, right? Like, he needs it. And it's kind of in general theory. That's kind of why she's leaving. Fine, you're not going to do it. Ben will do it. I believe in Ben. And so this blade represents a bunch of those things, right? So a little bit of a bat signal, a Rey signal, if you will.
Yeah, a Rey signal. And I think for Luke too, he's got to have a complicated relationship with all of his lightsabers, all two of them, as you point out. But this is the one that when he first picked it up, it was a simpler meaning to him. It was his father's blade. It was his inheritance. It was the possibility of standing up against the dark side. And I think for me, it is, I think of him returning to, like, I got really, really so far away from those ideas because of everything else I went through that I'm going to support those ideas again, that imagine a little bit of what I felt when I was young and first saw this blade myself.
Yeah. I agree with that. And then, you know, if you can make Kylo a little upset in the process, you got to win all around.
Yeah. And that's always fascinating, too, of like if Kylo had been able to be calm enough in that moment and not as obsessed with his fear of Luke and his need to destroy Luke to prove himself, that maybe he would have been like, how do you have that? Yeah. But he's just caught up in like my master, he's so powerful. That man is so powerful. And I guess he can do anything. And I guess that means I'm nothing. Like, I think that's. Yeah. So where his mind is, all those fears that he doesn't think to question it.
Yep.
Yeah. And really, really great. We go on about this a lot, but, you know, I do think that the end of The Last Jedi, the third act, matches up really well with Rise of Skywalker and Luke embracing what this blade, the best of what this blade can mean, is something that happens in both films.
Yeah.
All right, great question, Harry. We're going to move on to a question from Derek Norris. Derek says, is there anything Shmi could have told Anakin in their final moments together that could have swayed him to a place of calm and forgiveness? Watching Anakin's arc in Clone Wars Season 4, and there is a hands-off mentality when it comes to Annie's anger and vengeance building. Thanks, lads. Scrolling through those episodes and in Season 4 of Clone Wars in particular, I think the whole show wrestles with moments of Anakin's anger. But in Season 4, there is the Zygerian slavers encounter where he gets extremely angry about slavery. And we kind of learn that he doesn't talk about his past, and Ahsoka doesn't know much about his past. That is the arc where Obi-Wan's death is faked, and that sends Anakin into a spiral and real anger at not being included in that plan. So there's a lot going on with Anakin's anger ratcheting up in season four. So with that in mind, what do you think of this this question, Ken? Is there something Shmi could have done and should the Jedi have been more involved in Anakin's anger?
Yeah, as far as the Jedi, yeah, we've talked often about, even, you know, I know you sometimes wish you could sit down with Yoda to get him to give some different advice to Anakin in Attack of the Clones, or when or later when the visions start coming in. And I don't disagree with that at all. As far as Shmi, you know, their last meeting, you know, obviously she's not in a good way, but if I was to choose, if I could put some dialogue in her mouth there, I would say, don't hold anger in your heart, Annie. That's what I would say, which is a forgiveness thing. There's a lot of forgiveness of himself that I think Anakin needs to make and maybe never does, until maybe the end. So it's letting go of the attachments to those feelings too, not just to anger to the stuff on the outside, but he's probably really upset that in the last 10 years he didn't choose a different path to reunite with his mother, and then the vision started happening a little bit later and all that stuff. So yeah, if she could have known, if she could have felt it, she gave him some great advice in Phantom Menace. Great advice growing up, but I think, don't let the anger, hold on, fester and grow in your heart.
Yeah, no, there's a solid advice. I totally agree with you about the Jedi. And I think it's very much on purpose in the storytelling of those later seasons of Clone Wars in particular, that I think it is a criticism of the Jedi that they have trained Anakin. He knows what he is supposed to do and not supposed to do on paper, and it's his responsibility to master his feelings, and they kind of keep poking him toward mastering his feelings. But I think kind of the tragedy of that storytelling is he needed more help than they gave. I think, you know, when Obi-Wan talks about failing Anakin as a teacher, I think that is sometimes a part of it, and all the Jedi. And in that scene in Revenge of the Sith, when Anakin does go to Yoda for help, Yoda gives him great advice, but it's not as emotional. Focused as maybe Anakin needed. So I think there's that. I kind of think Shmi could have given him any amount of great advice in the moments that he was leaving. And I think kind of the story of Anakin is he forgot.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, people talk a lot about Phantom Menace, obviously a ton of debates about the quality, but even going back to the machete cut, where the viewing order, where people say, like, you don't need to watch Phantom Menace because there's nothing narratively important. Like, okay, we can debate that, but Phantom Menace to me is, it's so emotionally and thematically important. I feel like a part of it is, you know, seeing Anakin when he's young and innocent, but also just seeing that he's given almost all of the wisdom that he needs, right? Because the wisdom that Shmi does give him before he leaves is, you know, accept change. Only you can choose your own path and actions. Listen to your heart and feelings. Your instinct to be selfless and go help people is great. Go do those things.
Yeah.
If you choose, because it's your choice. She gives him all of this great advice. And then I think, even to tie it to another quote that we all love from The Phantom Menace, I think he does focus on his mother. But, you know, he really does let his focus determine his reality. And instead of focusing on what Shmi said to him or what Shmi would have wanted, he only focuses on the pain of losing her. And I think that's a part of the story, is there's this great tragedy of, if what he was able to focus on in losing Shmi is, yeah, it's horrible and it's painful, and be honest with himself about those emotions and process them. But then really think about, who was she? What did she believe in? What did she tell me that he could have helped himself from going down this path?
Indeed. And these are things that I think went off a little bit later on in this final moment. So, you know, I'm not saying he's running Shmi quotes through his brain up there in the Emperor's throne room, but I think that stuff was there. It was instilled there. And like you said, forgot it, moved past. And that was part of Luke's sacrifice, the compassion and everything that Vader felt in that moment. Anakin wins out. It is, to me, that little boy finally listening.
Yeah, exactly. A great question, Derek. Always happy, always happy to think about Shmi and possible Shmi choose your own adventures of what could have Shmi done or said. But ultimately, Anakin's choice, I think. Yeah. Any final thoughts on that one, Ken?
No, I think last week you mentioned the machete order too, which is I have got nothing against those people who like that order. Cutting stuff out. You even hear that thing about, you know, you could take Chewbacca out of the story and nothing would change. But why would you?
joy would change, right?
There's so much there. And same with all these films. Are some better than others? Yeah, sure. Maybe we can have those discussions. But the emotional canon we love so much just runs through all of them. And they're all one big living story to me.
Yeah, exactly. Well said. We're going to move on to our questions from our patrons on Patreon. First one comes from Joseph Anderson. Joseph says, "Hello, Force Center. I couldn't help but draw some similarities with training conflict in The Last Jedi with Luke Skywalker and Ben Solo in the vibe I feel like we could be getting in the Obi-Wan Kenobi series with Obi-Wan and Anakin. What do you guys think of some of the similarities and differences you think we could see with Luke and Ben's training that we saw in The Last Jedi with what we could see with Obi-Wan and Anakin in the upcoming series?" This is a great question. I really love this. I think there's really strong connections between these two failed relationships between master and apprentice. Ken, where do you go? What do you feel as the connections between these tales of tragedy, and what more do you hope to see?
Yeah, I wonder that failure as a teacher and mentor thing is going to be strong, but it's like, to me, Obi-Wan might be on the other side of it, right? So can he overcome? And then now he might, again, we don't know. And I don't want to go too far down the path, but I just see Obi-Wan maybe having to accept that failure, which is similar to me, obviously, in Luke overall, but even in that moment, there's some like, damn, I failed. And that's the way it is. He doesn't get time to process it in the moment. He has to process it later. But maybe Obi-Wan will process it, not in a flash, but just like, I need to move on. I need to let go of this. I need to cut these attachments. And maybe it is in a moment. Does it happen with Anakin or Vader on the ground and Obi-Wan could go for the kill and he won't? Maybe. I can see that connective thread. But I just, it's all kind of similar to me, but moving forward, I love the turning of the chapter in Obi-Wan. I want to see what that looks like and see what that feels and how he has to really let go of his attachment to the idea that he failed.
Yeah, to accept his failure and move on from it and focus on Luke.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think there's great connective tissue, as Joseph is saying. I think, you know, both Obi-Wan and Luke acknowledge failing their students. They say it out loud. I failed you, you know? And I think it's fun for us as fans to have opinions on exactly how and why and what information is given to us in the films and what can we extrapolate based on the characters of Obi-Wan and Luke. But we both know, if we believe their actual words, that they do feel they failed their students. Yeah. And we know that both Anakin and Ben blame their masters for some of their problems. You know, so much of the story of The Last Jedi is Luke feels he had this one moment, this flickering second of, should I try to stop Ben from destroying and killing and hurting everything I love and damaging the galaxy, and then realizing that's wrong, and then feeling like he, you know, paid the price for that one moment of failure. Mm. You know, and with Anakin and Obi-Wan, certainly, I think Obi-Wan blames himself for not guiding Anakin better, for not seeing how much pain Anakin was in and helping him with it better. But then there's also the whole, like, and he did ultimately cut off his limbs.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's definitely, I think, this great dark side perspective where you want to be able to be angry at everybody but yourself. It wasn't my choice. It was everybody else failed me and I hate them for it. Right. Mm-hmm. And for Anakin and Ben, it's very easy for them to hate Obi-Wan and Luke respectively. And then they have other characters in their lives that it's harder for them to hate because it's harder for them to put the blame of their fall to the dark side on other people. So definitely with the Kenobi show, I've been getting so excited about so many ideas. I do need to be sure to slow my roll and say, this would be great if this happened.
Yeah.
It doesn't, I'll accept whatever show they give me and enjoy that show for what it is. That big old caveat said, I really hope that the Obi-Wan show involves Obi-Wan trying to get through to Anakin in accepting that he can't get through to Anakin. He's not the right person to get through to Anakin, because it's very easy for Anakin to blame Obi-Wan. Mm-hmm. And I think, given all the other storytelling of Star Wars, I think Obi-Wan trying to get through to Anakin and failing to do that and thinking, because I couldn't get through to him, no one can. Anakin is gone, period.
Right.
I believe Luke is the new hope. I believe Luke is maybe always meant to be the chosen one.
Right.
It's a great story for Obi-Wan, but then it connects in a really fascinating way to Luke, right? Because we know in Return of the Jedi, Obi-Wan believes that Anakin is gone. There's no one to save. Right. Darth Vader just needs to be stopped. And I think in this story of students growing beyond their masters, I think Luke does grow beyond Obi-Wan to the point that he is in a similar position in The Last Jedi, but he's at a more evolved position, because Luke knows that someone can get through to Ben, but Luke himself can't. You know, he says, I've come to face him and I can't save him. And then he has that line that has, you know, wonderful multiple different meanings. But I think one of them is about Ben Solo being able to be rescued. When Luke says no one's ever really gone, I think that's Luke learning from Obi-Wan's mistake.
Yeah.
Obi-Wan believed that because I can't get to Anakin, then he's gone. And I feel like Luke is saying, I can't get to Ben, but that doesn't mean somebody else can. No one's ever really gone. You know, my father wasn't really gone. Ben's not really gone. Someone can always, you know, help a person who has fallen to the dark side.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think about the series. This, now we're just speculating rapidly irresponsible here. Do you want to see any of this from Vader? Like, what's your envision of just that moment where Obi-Wan's like, yeah, this cat's gone? Is it a fight? Is it a conversation? Is it aftermath? Is it a campfire?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. And this is the kind of thing where the story around it makes a difference, right? Of sure. How you build to that moment. I think it would be so powerful if Obi-Wan almost does get through to Anakin.
Right. Yeah.
You know, where there is true relief and bliss that, you know, the yellow goes out of the eyes and he is almost back and he just can't, but something, you know, and this is, you get into the real mechanics of the story and what's at stake outside of just the emotions of Obi-Wan and Vader. In the situational story,
right?
You know, that if Obi-Wan did everything he could to get Anakin back, he was on the precipice and he still turned back in a way that really enforces Obi-Wan's belief that no, he's gone, you know, and nothing can ever get him back. I would be really intrigued by that. This is incredibly wild speculation.
Yeah.
The thing that to me is less speculative is I have great hope that they address the fact that Obi-Wan seems to really believe that Anakin is gone.
Right, right, right.
Like truly in his heart of hearts, that it's not a line. That the from a certain point of view isn't a manipulation of Luke. That's truly what Obi-Wan believes.
Yeah, I trust they'll keep that in mind. But yeah, you're think of the Ahsoka Anakin Rebels end of season 2 moment with his eyes out of the cracked mask. And I believe in my heart there was a flicker of Anakin there, and it gets washed away real fast. So I don't want to completely repeat that beat, but I think that's there. I think that's the fight. So I'm up for a Vader has a moment of weakness, a fleeting moment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the rematch of the century, you know, I think that is going to be physical combat, but I also do hope it is the emotional rematch of the century, as we've talked about as well.
Sit down here, Anakin. Have a drink here. Let's talk. I'm Vader. No, you're Anakin.
I want Obi-Wan to just approach him and just have a list like he's written out old school on paper of like, Anakin, these are all my mistakes. These are all the ways I've failed you.
I wrote them out because I just find it easier to get out my thoughts.
Yes, a big apology note that he's going to slip him on a Star Destroyer. Anyway, great question, Joseph Anderson. This is one of those moments of Star Wars poetry that I really cherish. So thanks for giving us an opportunity to think on it and talk on it. Moving on to a question from Alden Diaz. Hello, Alden. Thanks for sending in the question. Ken says, hello, Ken and Joseph. I hope you're both having a nice spring thus far. With that said, let's talk about the absolute antithesis of spring, Sheev Palpatine. He is the fall, isn't he? I was listening to an interview with Claudia Gray recently, and she took a brief dive into her feelings on the dark side. She cited the constant pain, relentless suffering, and nonstop state of sadness and resentment that these dark side characters are always struggling. And it made me think, is Palpatine struggling? Do you think he's long since beyond that point? Just really made me wonder if he ever has sleepless nights. Does he cry? Is he constantly riding some kind of breaking point? Or maybe he's a singular case in which that struggle is truly over. Is he the end point for all Darksiders? Thanks, as always, for the wonderful work. Oh, man. I just take what questions are next, Ken. But for myself, you know, pulling some Kenobi questions, some Palpatine questions, what a happy day for me. And you too as well.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on this? Do you think that, let's boil this down. Do you think Palpatine cries at night? Do you think he struggles with anything? Or is he perfectly content in his evil?
I got to tell you, the Claudia Gray stuff is great. I think she's just right about all that stuff. I don't want to say I'm with Alden. Alden doesn't necessarily say that this is what he thinks, but he offers a question. There is a part of me that looks at Palpatine and thinks he's beyond that in a way, but it's all there. And maybe he's feeding his own dark side energy off of it. And I don't mean that like literally just, but like emotionally, you know, I love dealing with the emotions of Star Wars and these characters. Of he might've, maybe he's crying. Maybe in Phantom Menace, he cries. I don't know. But I think he's in that office just feeling all the anger and then feeling all the, you know, the stuff in the galaxy around him, Coruscant, all the anxiety, all the fears, the oppression, everything, almost like he's just feeding off that stuff emotionally. And so the answer might be that he thinks he's beyond it, but we definitely don't have, this isn't Anakin Vader. This isn't even Maul, who is this blunt weapon who has this hole in his soul. We get to see some, I would say, from all softer moments in his final seconds. I don't think we see any of that with Palpatine. And I like the idea of at one point, he just not defeated that, just decided to completely be fueled by that in his quest for unlimited power. But which shows that there is a pretty sizable hole in his soul.
Yeah, no, I love this. I love what you're saying. I like the idea that maybe we'll never see it. Maybe we'll never know what it is, but there is some wound, some fear,
yeah,
that motivates Palpatine. You know, I like the story of Star Wars where he wasn't just born like, ooh, that's an evil one.
Right, yeah.
That something happened to him and he fell to the dark side and gave himself to the dark side. But even more than the various characters we've met, like Maul, we get to know, as you're saying, get to know it. He as Obi-Wan tells him, he never had a choice. He was just given to Palpatine and raised in pain and anger and blame the Jedi for it and lash out and hate. And he goes through his journey. We get to see Asajj Ventress go through her journey. We know Vader's journey. We know Ben Solo's journey. We don't really know Palpatine's journey other than he fell and he was like, great. This is where I want to be. I think his big weakness, I don't think he cries.
Mm.
I think what keeps him up at night is fear. Yep. I think he is in pain from constant fear. I think we get to see him cackling and preening and enjoying other people's pain. And I think he does enjoy it, but never really. He doesn't actually get to enjoy anything he's won. He never gets to the top of the mountain and looks down and goes, great. I mean, he kind of does. He literally does with Yoda with the hand gesture of this is great. But I think any moment of enjoyment at all of the horrific things he's accomplished is immediately fed back into that dark side circle by his fear of losing it.
Yeah.
And I kind of think he's lying to himself about it. I think he thinks he is the epitome of the dark side, that he has absolutely mastered it, right?
Yeah.
And when he's telling Anakin the story of Darth Plagueis and he's manipulating Anakin, claiming the Jedi seek more and more power just like everybody else, and he says all who gain power are afraid to lose it, it's really from this wise man place. But I think he has fallen to that as well. And if you go through like some of his quotes and some of his actions, a lot of what we actually see Palpatine do is just desperately try not to lose his power and react to a theoretical future where he could, you know, exactly like Anakin falling to a vision of maybe a bad thing happening to Padme in the future. That he's just up every night with who could attack me? How could they take it from me? Mm-hmm. And in particular with the Jedi, like I love Palpatine's delivery in Revenge of the Sith of the Jedi are relentless.
Yeah. Right.
You know, when he's telling Anakin to go kill them all right away, it's all a manipulation of Anakin. It's all tactical. The Jedi do need to die. But the way that line is delivered, like that bastard's feeling that. Mm-hmm. He's like, they're going to chase me forever. They're going to take this from me. You know?
Yeah. No, see, my thing with Palpatine is, you know, in Revenge of the Sith, the great over-the-top moment. I love that it's over-the-top because he wins, right? Power. Yeah. We need power. We can poke, and that for years was a lot of people poke fun at that moment. I think now it's a favorite moment for a lot of people because of what it represents. So to me, yeah, Palpatine, more than any other Sith Lord that we know of, and perhaps any other Sith Lord, has won. He's got what everybody wants. And then he spends the next 20-plus years, like you say, looking around every corner and then trying to hold on and get more power and more power in the unknown regions and what's out there. And, oh, if I die, I'll burn it all down and then also try to bring me back. And you're right. And that, it does represent that. That's why, you know, if Yoda's statement, you know, fear leads to this, that, and the other thing, it begins with fear. So it makes sense to me that Palpatine represents what that fear actually truly can be.
Yeah, exactly. I think whatever kind of initial wound or series of wounds in his young life, which would have led him to the dark side, is all about a loss of control, right? Of somebody is going to take this from me. A couple other quotes, just tracking him through the years of how many times his focus is on Jedi taking things from him. You know, the Jedi are relentless, but then, you know, Empire Strikes Back, the son of Skywalker must not become a Jedi. That's his whole focus. Mm-hmm. If you accept that it is some version of Palpatine, puppeteering Snoke, the entire mechanics of The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi are just the First Order could be happily taking over the galaxy, and he's just running around desperate that Luke Skywalker doesn't come back, you know? Yeah. Snoke's line, Skywalker lives, the seed of the Jedi Order lives, as long as he does, hope lives in the galaxy. And then we get, you know, Palpatine himself hanging from the Klarm at the beginning of Rise of Skywalker, saying, kill the girl and the Jedi and become what your grandfather Vader could not. Almost all of his actions that we see are this desperate attempt to prevent the possible loss of his power.
Yeah, and not letting go, not moving on, all those things. Yeah, and I love it's not as deep and meaningful as some of the stuff you're bringing up here, Joseph, but I even love that he's so petty with Ben Solo at the end. Just like, I fail you, so shall you fall. Like, he's just like, he's so angry about that because that's how he did lose his power, essentially. He's just petty. He's petty and fearful and angry.
Yeah, and I love that because it is one of those moments of that's a great mythic moment. Even the way it's written is so, like, beautifully, mythical and pulpy. And where those two things meet, as I fell, so falls the last Skywalker. But it still has that energy of, like, you know, you left me with the bill the last time we went at the diner. So this time I'm going to leave you with the bill at the diner. Like, it's so petty and real, you know?
Yeah. That's so true.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think he's just so I think he is a more effective version of the dark side. Right. But I don't think he is different. I think he has this insecurity, this fear, and that turns into rage. How can I'm going to find anybody who could threaten me and I'm going to manipulate them or turn them or kill them. And then I'm going to get more. But as soon as I get more, now what if I lose that? And I don't think he cries. I don't think he has weakness. I don't think he has some person that he used to love that he pictures necessarily. Maybe. Mm-hmm. But I think he just sits there and festers in his fear always.
Look, man, I think it's a char hound. It's just a framed picture of a char hound.
Yeah, there was a dog who ran away from him. I don't like you, Sheev. Says Bolty, the char hound who ran away. Bolty was a terrible name. Don't give your dog the name Bolty.
Multi works.
Anyway, thank you everyone for the great questions. Alden, Joseph, Derek, and Harry, all great fun questions. That's it for the questions, Ken.
That's it for the questions. Almost done with this episode here, but you can find us on Twitter if you'd like at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Podcast available on a lot of different spots, including Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Amazon Music, and Spotify. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. You can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. For me, you can go to my website, kennapsock.com, or follow me at Ken Knapsack. We always like to focus charities or things that we're working on and supporting in the real world. One of them for me, I've been talking about it, but we really started working with them hand in hand over at the Good People Association, is the Battle Buddy Foundation. This is founded by husband and wife team, Kenny and Chrissy, after Kenny got out of the Marines and almost took his own life. And so he started a foundation to help pair veterans returning to normal civilian life and pairing them with dogs, emotional support dogs and service dogs. They've placed 35 so far. It's a great organization. We're doing some work. You can go find out more at tbbf.org, the Battle Buddy Foundation. Joseph.
Yeah, that's a great, great organization, Ken, and such a great mission. You can find me Twitter and Instagram and TikTok at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all of my other comedy adventures, other podcasts and comedy albums and all sorts of stuff like that. And then for the thing that I would like to plug this week, I want to bring up the service ResistBot. This is a texting service. I think you can do it through Twitter. I use the text version, lots of different ways to use it, but it's just a very fast, automated way to reach your reps. And if you feel passionate about something that's going on in the world and feel like you want your reps to weigh in or have a position or vote a certain way, this is a great way to reach them. I think it's another way to be reminded that we do have power and we have opportunities to exercise it by letting our reps know what it is that we believe in and we want to see happen.
Great thing indeed. Great thing indeed. Did the ResistBot, does it have a resistance logo hat I can buy?
I think it is. I don't think it's that political. I mean, it is very political, obviously. Yeah. Okay. But I don't know. I haven't seen it with a hat. I don't think there's a full like automated droid version yet that's literally walking around town. Maybe we'll evolve to that. Of like, there's an actual ResistBot on every corner that you can tell your concerns to.
Love it. Check out ResistBot, my friends. So that is it. That is it for this week. So for Palpatine's quiet, lonely tears, this has been ForceCenter. We'll see you next week, friends.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.